the opportunity to really just open up how fans engage and experience the watching of esports is really untapped. And so we approach fantasy in the same way, where we're building a kind of another layer to the viewing experience.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
All right. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of our podcast. This is Roan from Sports Tech X. And today I'm going to focus on what you might call one of the few success stories of the COVID-19 pandemic, if you want to use that moniker for anything. It's a bit sensitive, I know, but there might be such a thing. And that would be esports. We've all read about how many gazillion hours gaming hours have increased by, and maybe more recently about how Facebook and Microsoft are coming together to take over the world of gaming, if such a thing is even possible. But anyway, there's a lot happening in the space that we've been reading about through this pandemic. And today, that is going to be the focus of the conversation. We at Sports Tech X have long said that esports is one arm of the trident, you could say, that is driving growth in sports tech investment alongside fitness and content. And we've also always said that game agnostic platforms are the ones, platforms and solutions are the ones that we find most interesting, the ones that kind of sit horizontally across the industry and are not being dominated by a game publisher, shall we say. One such emerging horizontal is fantasy esports. And today, to discuss that in more depth, we have Matthew Gunnan, founder and CEO of Esports One. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Great being here. Thank you for having me, Ron.
How are things in your part of the world?
It's going well. We're hanging in there. We're down in LA, so we're still kind of battling a bit of the COVID up and down kind of spikes. But as a whole, like you mentioned, you know, the esports industry is kind of continuing to grow a bit and thrive in a sense with everyone being home. And so we've kind of been focused around kind of how we can, you know, not really capitalize on it, but just everyone's at home working, you know, tirelessly.
Make the best of a bad situation, right? Yeah.
Yeah, really, because it is. It's a crummy situation, but we're fighting through it. So
perfect. Just to give our listeners a preview of the pre-recording conversation, Matthew and I were talking about how lucky we are to have nice backgrounds behind us. Like I'm somewhere near a beach in Spain, and he's somewhere near a beach in LA. So things are not all too bad. We have some sun and sand.
Yeah. And we have nice weather.
That's not too bad. All right, perfect. So let's jump right in. Matthew, first thing, I always start with something pretty basic, which is tell us about yourself question. Just simple stuff about where you come from and why you do what you do.
Absolutely. So I've been a lifelong kind of entrepreneur. Grew up, started my first company when I was still in, I guess, junior high, when I was about 14 or 15. And ended up selling it a few years later. So I've always had that entrepreneur itch. But I, you know, out of college, you know, fiddled with a couple of projects here and there. Moved to San Antonio, worked for, you know, a web hosting engineering firm, competitor to AWS, and called Rackspace. And while I was there, I kind of first took the step as an entrepreneur into esports. It was kind of in the early days of League of Legends season one, or actually it was the beta. You know, I would work, you know, 40-hour days at Rackspace, and then as a team lead. And then in my spare time, I started seeing the growth of League of Legends and just kind of its trajectory. And I started playing it with a lot of my friends, a lot of the people I worked with. And there's kind of a gap in kind of knowledge. So on the professional side for League of Legends specifically, which is one of the, you know, biggest game titles, there was a need for a website. And so I created Leaguepedia, which was you know, at the time became one of the largest esports websites in the world. You know, within, I don't know, probably 3 months later, I left my job at Rackspace and have been in esports ever since. And that was about 10 years ago. Since then, I ended up selling Leaguepedia. I have worked, you know, kind of at a number of, you know, different companies, from Twitch to a gambling company in esports, another broadcasting company. And then about 2.5 years ago, I started Esports One, which is what we're here to talk about a bit today. But we started it out of New York. It was really just kind of a small idea, you know, really based around kind of the technology and kind of how data plays a big part in esports. Then I kind of went and got some early funding, kind of I just moved to New York, and the rest is history. And so I think esports has always been my passion, and luckily I've been able to make a career out of it.
Fantastic. I'm going to touch on a couple of things that you said there, which is A, you've spent a lot of time in the industry, which is great. I was just checking out Leaguepedia, which eventually I see became Gamepedia, which is that right?
Yeah, Leaguepedia is now Gamepedia.
Yeah?
Correct.
And which currently it's almost a top 100 website in the US, so clearly it's still going gangbusters. So that being said, you've been in the industry for a while. I want to know more about Esports One, and more importantly for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well, why the fantasy sports route? I mean, having been in the industry for so long, you could have gone down, I don't know, tools for gamers, you could have gone down tournament platforms. There's a lot of stuff happening in the space. Why were you attracted to fantasy for esports?
When I started Esports One, it only made sense that fantasy was going to translate to esports, just like in the same way that how it plays a big part in, you know, traditional sports. The thing is that what the traditional way of looking at of how people play fantasy football or daily fantasy for traditional sports doesn't necessarily, you know, correlate very well to the esports space. And so I knew that fantasy was going to be a staple of esports, but it wasn't going to be in the same way that you think of it now. And so when I started Esports One, my first objective and kind of our first goal was really around looking at not really kind of the big picture of what we're going to build as a product, what we're going to build as a platform, what the big opportunity is. It was, what is going to be the underlying technology? What is going to be the underlying kind of factors that allow us to build whatever we want to, basically? And it came down to be that, you know, data was king. We needed to find ways to go out, capture all of the information on the players, the teams, you know, their play style, match history, items, everything you could think of. And then we also needed to be able to recognize and capture events on the screen fully automated. So I always use I use traditional sports kind of examples of, you know, if you're the stats or the information that you see during a Major League Baseball game or a football game, you know, these things have people sitting in the stand, sitting at home watching the games, and they're manually tabulating a lot of this information. In esports, that was how the scene had to capture those stats early on as well. You would think that there would be, you know, automated ways to pull it from the game, you know, through their APIs or whatnot. But at the time, there wasn't. There wasn't a way to do it in real time either. And so when I started Esports One, I knew, all right, I knew needed to be able to build out this all of this data. I needed to capture as much data, and I needed to be able to automate it. And so how that feeds, how that leads to fantasy is that when we have all this information, when we have this ability to recognize things that are happening in real time, we can look at, all right, what is the next step of fantasy? You have traditional fantasy, you have daily fantasy. Well, the next step for that is real-time fantasy. And so we see the future of fantasy esports as being real-time, as being while you're watching, you're making lineup adjustments, you're predicting things that are happening, you know, on screen. You're being more engaged, because watching esports is a much more of an active viewing experience. And we see and believe that the opportunity to really just open up how fans engage and experience the watching of esports is really untapped. And so we approach fantasy in the same way, where we're building a kind of another layer to the viewing experience. And just to use one last kind of comparison, when I was a young kid, I was back in the AOL days. You would dial up to, you know, AOL. You'd be chatting on Instant Messenger, and every Sunday night, when I was at home before I had to go to school Monday, they'd have Sunday night football. And on AOL, there was this little feature where you could go and you could join a chat room, and you could, you know, sit there with all these other people that are watching the game, and they would have these little trivia things at the top, and the trivia questions wouldn't be like, who do you think is going to win? Will this team get a touchdown? It was, you know, will the next play be a run or a pass? You know, will Emmett Smith, you know, get 5 yards or 10 yards on his next run? Will the next field goal, you know, be, you know, more than 40 yards? Like things that are like actively engaging. Right. And it was fun. It was, and you would be competing against all these other people. But I don't think traditional sports as a whole is a active viewing experience. Esports, on the other hand, really is. And so that's where we see fantasy playing a major part into, you know, that experience.
I find it fascinating, the breakdown that you gave right there, which is from traditional fantasy to daily fantasy to, as you said, real-time live fantasy. And there are many things to deconstruct in that conversation about how data capture has moved from manual annotation, as it has been done traditionally, to now computer vision-based stuff. But let's just say data is now coming in real time. So to move the fantasy experience from picking a team from before to daily to real time, that actually brings me very nicely into my next question, which is, what is your monetization model, or how does the business model work? Because to me, it sounds like you're getting closer and closer to betting in one way as well, because essentially that's what the betting industry is trying to do for sports, which you mentioned it as well, that it's not been a very interactive, not a very layered watching experience. It's kind of flat. But betting has the opportunity to do that. And similarly for fantasy. So do you see parallels in that? And is your monetization model for the platform kind of built with that logic?
So first and foremost, we are in no way kind of building a betting platform. We're also staying very far away from betting. So I was an executive at a betting company, gambling company in esports for over a year. And the most important thing for a company in esports, and now this isn't the case in traditional sports, and I'll tell you why. You know, in traditional sports, there's no one that owns football. There's no one that owns baseball. You know, if I wanted to start another NFL league tomorrow, and that people do it all the time, you know, I could do that. In esports, you have rights holders, you have the game publishers, and not only that, you constantly have new game titles coming out, and whether it's by the same game publisher or it's by a completely new one. And so, one, it's very key to any early success right now within esports to have a strong relationship with the game publishers, that they trust you, that you're not kind of, you know, pushing the boundaries. And right now, gambling kind of is a gray area. And so right. We are, you know, making sure that gambling plays no part. As much data that we have, and we have predictive analytics, we can tell you, you know, within the first 10 minutes with 90% accuracy, who's going to win the game. And, you know, casinos, betting platforms, you know, they all, you know, we get people reaching out daily. And we've made the decision not to even look in that direction. When I say real-time fantasy, though, think of it like an esport, really. If I'm playing one of the card games, you know, I'm not sure how many people are listening might, you know, kind of understand this analogy, but there's a lot of like real-time strategy games that are, you know, really big in esport. You have, you know, Hearthstone, you have Runeterra, you have Teamfight Tactics. These are all kind of virtual card games that you're competing against other people, and you're building these decks, you're playing abilities. And that's sort of how we're looking at fantasy in the same way of that real-time strategy fantasy, adding that element. And so from a monetization standpoint, we don't think of it as, all right, let's get 100 people to spend a dollar, buy in $10, and then half the pot goes to the winner or whatnot. And then we take a rake of all that. Like that's not a monetization approach within esports that will scale and that will really, you know, gain traction, because you end up getting in a position where, just like, you know, traditional fantasy right now, but especially right now in esports, where the top, you know, 0.1% of fantasy esports people, players, are winning all the pots. Yeah. because they figured out, they're the ones that have the data, they're the ones that have the insights. And so, you know, it might work for 6 months, you might make a lot of money from it for 6 months, but then it just tails off, and that's, you know, that's been shown. So we think of it as, all right, how can we build a long lasting esport like platform that keeps the user engaged at every step of their esports experience, whether it's from how they interact with their friends, you know, how they research up and coming players, how they are notified when a match is going to start, just the content that they're served. And then how can we introduce a similar payment, you know, system, revenue system that relates to what they experience already when they play video games? And that's really through battle passes, you know, that's through event passes, that's through gamification, leveling up type systems.
So activity driven monetization models, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we'll tie in like subscriptions where users can subscribe for, you know, some more features and access to maybe some ways to export data. Because if you play on DraftKings today, not just to kind of, you know, point at them, but if I play on DraftKings, if I want to read, you know, say I'm playing a daily fantasy football tournament or match, and if I want to read the latest news, I have to go to Yahoo or wherever. If I want to find stats on, you know, the players and really the tendencies, how they perform, I have to pay Fantasy Lab $250 a month for access to that data. If I want to watch the event, I have to go to network television. If I want to chat with my friends, I have to get on Facebook group or whatever. Our goal is to bring as much of that in-house into one platform and have the user part of the entire experience at Esports One.
Got it. And actually, that's interesting, because that's what I meant when I was talking about the monetization models. I understand that it's very early days for betting in esports, and betting in general is a taboo word in a lot of places. It was more about the monetization models, about how you think, about how the pot works. And that's interesting. You're just driving it by making it a holistic user experience and like make the user pay for whatever they want. They opt in for what, based on whatever activity they choose. Okay.
And if we were to do betting right now, well, this last point, like think of the cost to acquire users in for gambling websites.
Right. That's a big one.
And like, if we were to do that right now as a venture-backed company, I mean, we'd be paying, you know, $200, $300 user acquisition costs. Like, it's not scalable early on either.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
Interesting, Matthew. Thanks so much for all of that. That's some cool thoughts you've left us with there. And I'm going to come back to what has been some of your biggest successes that you've seen to date. You've already talked about this amazing user experience that you're trying to build. You've talked about all the experience that you've had previously in the esports industry. So tell us, what do you think has been the one big thing that you guys have gotten to already?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably have to kind of combine this with the other side of it, with kind of the challenge as well. Kind of like what our biggest kind of hurdle or challenge has been, because when this pandemic really kind of came to be, we were definitely not, you know, affected. Esports continues to grow, and COVID kind of really shined a light on the space. But early on, when it kind of first got started, we also had a lot, you know, a number of partners that we worked with, a number of clients that we kind of we're working on deals with that were greatly affected by it, whether it's hardware, whether it's live venues and whatnot. And so, you know, a lot of the projected revenue or potential kind of contracts that we had in place, or even kind of contracts that we already, you know, were working on, really kind of started to either fade away, or, you know, kind of we ran into some a lot of hurdles as a result, and we felt extremely bad for how it affected, you know, some of the other companies, especially those we worked with. But I think kind of the shining light of all that, or kind of where I look at just the resilience of our team, is everyone was aligned on the vision of what Esports One is. We have kind of separate partnerships outside of fantasy, and I think that's part of, like I was touching on earlier, it's a requirement of building a platform in esports, is you have to have a lot of touch points at various areas within the space. And, you know, the team wasn't distraught by what was happening. We have an office here where the team comes in, we all work together. Having to then move to working from home and working out of apartments and, you know, kind of be stuck indoors, like it really wore on everyone. And I think the biggest thing was we still launched or went, the latest League of Legends season was 3 weeks ago. And our team of you know, engineers and product and, you know, all of Esports One, they came together, they've introduced, you know, a whole new set of features. We built out partnerships with sites like InVen, Playful, U.GG, that we have all these features that tie in with them. We've had our largest user numbers. The site has stayed fully online and stable, and we're seeing just tremendous growth. And I think where that kind of, you know, the kind of summarize is we all kind of ran into this brick wall, you know, everyone in the, around the world ran this brick wall early in January and February. Really, no one really knew what that meant or what would happen. And I think, well, I guess for me personally, what I take a lot of pride in is that we have a team that trusts one another and believes that we'll figure out a way to get through it. Obviously, it didn't affect us nearly as much as others, but how it did, you know, the ways it did, we knew that we'd come out better in the end. I think in the end, that's really what it comes down to is to build a successful company, a startup. It really is the team. And it's really having a team that when things get tough or when things are, you know, you're hit with these uncertain sort of events or whatever it might be, and you don't really know what the end, you know, the finish line looks like, you have faith in one another that we'll figure out a way to get through it. And I think that's definitely something I take a lot of pride in.
And that's such a powerful thing. And I love that. It's one of those typical bring people together, make us stronger. If life hands you lemons, you ask for salt and tequila. Like, let's have a party. Let's make this bigger than what it is. That's fantastic, man. And kudos to you guys. It sounds like you're really building something together, because in adversity is when, as you said, teams come together and really cool stuff happens. I'm going to jump into something a bit personal now. You've already mentioned to us that you spend a fair bit of time in the industry, an entrepreneur who's been on this journey a few times. What has been a piece of advice that you were given that you wish you had known before you started, or the best piece of advice you can, whichever you want to take it?
It's more something that has come up as I've kind of just grown as a founder, as, you know, a team lead, that's been communicated by, especially by our investors. And that's that, you know, I think in any startup founder, a lot of what people look for when it comes to, you know, if I'm going to invest in someone or not, or if I want to partner with someone or not, you know, there's all the bells and whistles when you're pitching someone, but really it comes to just how you feel about that person and whether or not you feel like I was just, you know, referring to when the going gets tough, like, do they have the grit and resilience to get through it? And so when I talked to some of our investors, you know, early on, or, you know, we were getting ready maybe to raise, you know, a round or go back to them asking for advice or something, whatever it might be. One thing that they've always rest assured in with myself and our team is that they know that we have a level of grit and resilience. Because I think it can be learned, but I think it can be kind of taught in a sense. But also it has to be acknowledged that an investor, if they come, or a venture capital firm, one thing they really look for is they know that every company early on is going to run into a ton of pandemic brick wall type, you know, situations where whether it's something that they have no control over, whether it's something they do, whether they completely pivot as a company, they start, you know, have to start over, firings, whatever it might be. And I can tell you, like, along our, you know, along the path that with Esports One and throughout, like, there are times where you're at your lowest in it, but the one thing I would never consider is ever throwing in the towel or just walking away. Right. And I think that is a very undervalued, or not even undervalued, I think it's under-recognized sort of trait by founders, is that if you're going to start a company, you have to be the captain that goes down, not even goes down with the ship, that you're trying to rebuild the ship while it's sinking. Right. And that the people that you talk to, your investors, like, they know that, they see that in you. And I think that's something that's really... every conversation I have with investors, like, it really kind of hones in and kind of keeps molding kind of that mindset for me.
I just finished reading Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. And one of the iconic things that he says in that book, which certainly resonated with me, is that when he's telling the Nike story of how he got there, and says, like, listen, don't quit is not great advice. You know, you should know when to, like, let go of things, and you should know how to move on to things. The line that he uses is don't stop. Don't ever stop. And that, to me, is a very powerful thing. Like, even if you break and you fall down, like you said, hit those barriers, and the get up and go that you have to have as a founder. Just that idea of don't stop, I thought was fantastically powerful. Yeah.
Because it's really, I mean, it's very easy to quit. Like, it's very easy to not want to work out one day. It's very easy to sleep in. It's very easy to, you know, cheat on your diet. And those are kind of just day-to-day things that we don't really think a lot about. When it comes to running a company and being a founder, if you skip a workout or you cheat on a meal, you're only hurting yourself. But if you get to a point where, you know, you have 15 employees and a few million dollars invested and it's getting really tough and you're just like, you know, you're just throwing the towel, obviously hurting yourself, but you're also hurting all those people that put their faith in you and that, you know, they invested in you and had faith in you. And so you have to have that quality when it comes to how you think. And I've sacrificed my own health, my own, like, because for that of the people around me. And I think that's kind of a trait that's required early on is, you know, not to focus on yourself, but that you have to be able to sacrifice yourself for the betterment of those around you and those in what you're building, what you really want to get out of that company, that objective, that goal, whatever it might be.
Sage words. All right. Let's look forward. That's an important thing to do as well. So what can we expect from Esports One in the coming months, years, as we keep going along? What do you guys got up your sleeves?
Yeah, so we're continuing through this season. So we have the current kind of League of Legends season underway. So basically how the League of Legends season works is you have, you know, a spring split and a summer split, and those are kind of two different kind of seasons in itself, but it's all part of one big one. And then at the end, you have the World Championships. And so during the World Championships, we're going to start introducing the first kind of features or first, you know, kind of implementation of the real-time fantasy element. And without going too far in detail, it will be kind of that we've kind of been building the foundation of where we see really fantasy turning into, but haven't, you know, started to truly introduce the element that haven't been done before. Our goal is by the end of this year, you know, and by the World Championships to start implementing the first sort of layer that looks like. And then by next year, we'll start to introduce, you know, new game titles. We'll be expanding, you know, right now we're in two different regions in North America and Europe, but we'll be expanding to Korea, Japan, Brazil, and supporting all the various regions. So that's really, and then we're just continuing, you know, continue to grow. We're, you know, constantly hiring. We're constantly building out our team. Yeah, and building really cool stuff.
Very cool. Bigger, faster, stronger, of course. That's a given. But I'm really looking forward to the real-time fantasy stuff that you were talking about at the League of Legends Worlds. Not a big League of Legends guy myself, but I always thought that fantasy was the way I might get into one of these games, and I'll be curious to check yours out.
And to think of it, and I'll use this last kind of analogy, is imagine watching a football game, you know, without that bright yellow first down line. This is something that's been around for 25 years or so. So imagine watching, you know, Monday Night Football or Super Bowl and not having that bright yellow first down line guide kind of the flow of the game. Well, in esports, you know, the way we look at it is there isn't that yellow first down line. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but there's all these things that are happening, especially if you have never played, never watched, well, it's overwhelming. You have no idea what's happening. And so as part of our objective with building a fantasy platform is we're going to layer in a yellow first down line that makes it a lot more easy to understand, to educate yourself, to consume, whether you're a first-time viewer or you're a hardcore fan that's been playing video games for decades. And we want every experience to be tailored to the type of individual that you are. So,
yeah, very powerful thought. That educative, interactive, entertaining experience is a big part of the future of sport.
Yeah.
Awesome. Matthew, I'm going to sign off with my last question and my favorite one, by the way, to all my listeners who know this already. I love asking this question. Tell me about your favorite sporting moment. Now, I'm going to hazard a guess and maybe say it's going to come from the world of esports, or maybe not. Who knows? But
it does not.
It does not. Cool. Shoot, man, I'm dying here.
Yeah. So I graduated from Auburn University. Mm-hmm. So I am a Auburn Tiger through and through.
Charles Barkley, right?
Oh, Charles Barkley, Bo Jackson, right. Cam Newton. And biggest sporting moment was, so there's kind of two of them. One, when Auburn won the national title against Oregon, mm-hmm. Back in 2011, I was at the game in Arizona. Cam was the quarterback. We, you know, kicked a field goal to end the game. And with there with my dad and I are like big football fans. We watch all the college football games together. The second one would be Auburn kick six against Alabama, where Nick Saban's kicking a 53-yard field goal, and it comes up short and is returned for a touchdown to win the Auburn-Alabama game. And then the third one is Conor McGregor against Jose Aldo. I was at the UFC fight, and it was when Conor was really kind of picking up steam as a fighter. Conor comes out and knocks out Jose Aldo in 6 seconds. And each of those moments, I was there with my dad. And so I use a lot of these sort of experiences of, and kind of how I look at esports of, you know, when I watch football or when I was growing up watching football, my dad would sit there and he would explain things to me. He would tell me what's going on. And so now if we're watching esports, I'm doing the same thing for him, you know, explaining what's happening. And a big goal of ours is to make the same experiences that you enjoyed growing up when you're watching baseball or football with your dad or your mom or whoever, kind of bring that same level to esports, bring that same level of enjoyment to esports. And so our ultimate kind of vision is to make esports accessible to everyone and to do that through fantasy.
Man, I love that. That is so powerful and emotional and yet so real and tangible. Yeah, I mean, watching sports with somebody who you love and who teaches you about the experience and you can share that back. That is a very, very cool thought, Matthew. I'm glad. I'm kind of jealous. I'm really happy that you and your dad have that kind of shared sporting experience. All right, man. Matthew, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. I'm sure our listeners took a lot out of it. I know I did. And we'll keep a lookout for the League Worlds that you mentioned and all the other stuff that you guys get up to. So best of luck with it. With that said, that's the episode for today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Please make sure you give us some feedback and ratings and like and share and all that cool stuff, which Brianna will take you through how to do in the outro. But thanks a lot for tuning in. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.